Welcome back to Class Act, Updates in Education Law. I'm Miriam.
I'm Lisa.
We're attorneys at Walter Haverfield in Cleveland, Ohio. We practice school law. Every few weeks, we get together. We talk about recent legal developments in education that are relevant to school boards, administrators, and just anybody who works in education. Today, we wanted to take some time and talk about child find and evaluation mistakes that we've encountered. These are the top special education evaluation problems that trip up school districts and land them in litigation.
Yeah, so before we dive into the mistakes for our non-special education listeners and those just that kind of need a little refresher, let's talk about child find. Specifically, the IDEA, Individual Disabilities Education Act, requires that public school districts identify, locate, and evaluate all children with disabilities that are residing within that district's jurisdiction who are in need of special education and related services. So really, basically, any child who is suspected of being a child with a disability. So today, we are going to focus on a few of the key child find and evaluation issues that we seem to see come up on a more regular basis that do leave districts exposed to litigation. To get us started, let's first start with conducting an evaluation in the first place. And often we see that districts sometimes wait too long to conduct the evaluation or just deny the evaluation altogether. So when we look at that, let's go back to the initial request and obligations that you have as a district. So when an evaluation request or referral is made, keep in mind that it can be made either through a written document or it can be a request that's verbally made. And I think the verbal requests are sometimes what throw districts for a loop and get them off track with timelines and getting the individuals involved that need to be. So you need to make sure that all your staff know kind of what to look for to interpret as a request. So for an administrator, a teacher, you want to make sure that requests aren't getting lost in emails or phone calls and that the everyday teachers or those interacting with a child know what to do immediately when they receive a request. And that doesn't have to be magic words, I request an evaluation.
Right.
Keep in mind that it can be, I have a concern about my child being able to attend in class and keep track of all their assignments, get their work turned in. That is likely going to be enough to be a flag that you need to be at least starting the referral process and kicking in those timelines.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to point out that school districts are also obligated to evaluate children who reside in that area but may be going to a private school or a parochial school. And that's an area that I've personally seen where school districts forget the timelines, you know.
Absolutely.
Because they're not, the child's not there every day, so a parent might just send in a letter and that letter might just go to a specific administrator, and that administrator, while they may be responsible for private school children or non-public school kids, but they might not be aware of these pretty strict timelines. So that's an important area.
Yeah, and in those situations, you're just going to want to make sure you have a good, clear process for your internal staff and also building good relationships with the private schools that are within your geographical boundaries will be helpful too, so that those schools have a clear way of how to make a referral if they're making it or to guide the parent so that it does get to the right person to keep the process going. Because, yeah, you're not going to be able to defend an excuse, oh, it went and sat on administrator X's desk for 3 months before anybody looked at it.
Yeah, and I've seen that. And another area that I've seen is when a parent sends in a bunch of different requests at the same time. You know, I would like my child's records, and I would like this, and I would like that, and also I think my kid needs an assessment or some kind of testing for special education, and also please, you know, and then that email or that letter might just get lost. And I think it's really important for school districts to know, as soon as you see a request from a parent for any kind of assessment or evaluation, that needs to immediately trigger those timelines for you.
Yeah, and keep in mind, when we're saying trigger timelines, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to ultimately have to administer the evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
But it does mean your 30-day timeline for getting that team together
has started.
So you're going to get that team together and at least talk about the referral and determine if it's necessary to do an evaluation. Basically, determine if the team suspects a disability that would thus require an evaluation.
And it's important. This also applies to winter and summer breaks, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, those don't get you off the hook. So make sure you have personnel in place that can address those over those time frames.
Right. I've seen situations where a parent sends in a letter or an email on December 22nd, and everybody's gone, you know, nobody's looking at their email. And then by the time they come back and have started to sort through this, it's already been 30 days.
Yeah. Or the other ones I've seen frequently are the requests like the end of May or first week of June, mm-hmm. like right before you're about to be out for break. Mm-hmm. And the team does go through the process and meets and decides, oh, well, we're not going to evaluate because of the break. We'll talk about this again in August or September. Mm-hmm. And right there, you have a violation.
Yeah.
You can't just put it off if there's enough evidence that you are suspecting and should be doing an eval. So, yeah, definitely keep those in mind. The other area that we see with the conducting of an evaluation or denying it is denying a parent's request and not really having any data to support that the district does not suspect a disability. So this generally
denied.
Yeah. A lot of times we see this come up where a parent asks for an evaluation and maybe the child wasn't on the teacher's radar as necessarily mm-hmm. having a disability.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean just because they weren't on your radar that there isn't enough information there to suspect. Would say a lot of times these might be the kids who are not a behavior problem. They're
right.
just quiet but compliant and maybe just struggling a little bit but is not necessarily an outward problem in the classroom. Maybe those fly under the radar. But just make sure if you are going to deny the evaluation, which you can do if you don't suspect, you just really need to have that data to support why you're denying it. You know, they're performing well in all of their classes. They're achieving certain scores on
standardized assessments.
Mm-hmm. I mean, keep in mind that it's not, they have A's in every single class. That is not going to be sufficient data to deny in and of itself
mm-hmm.
an evaluation.
I think you just also want to make sure that you document this. You know, I just keep saying this in every single episode. Make sure that you document it. If you're denying a parent's request, you want to document that as well as the reasons for that denial in a prior written notice.
Yeah, that prior written notice is going to be your friend for a lot of these issues we're going to talk about today in making sure just that you do have documentation for all the decisions that you're making.
Mm-hmm.
The other area we see is response to intervention and using RTI to elongate the time frame before you do an evaluation, basically waiting too long. Also, at times we see that interventions are being put in place and they really do look like specially designed instruction, and yet the team didn't do an evaluation. So that's a good trigger. And you want to make sure you're getting credit for what you're doing, right?
Yeah, I think that's so important. I think sometimes I see this where school districts they're doing a lot. They're doing a lot of interventions already, and they're not getting credit for them, like you said, Lisa.
Right. And keep in mind, too, that really an evaluation can't be delayed because the district is implementing interventions and collecting data. So sometimes you're going to agree to do an evaluation and be implementing interventions and collecting data simultaneously. So there's nothing to say you have to have the evaluation done tomorrow. You can still use your timeline. You know, once you have consent, you have that 60 days to do an evaluation. You can very much use those 60 days to gather more data, and it's going to help you make your eligibility determination ultimately.
Sure.
The other things we just want to highlight really quick with evaluations is waiving reevaluations. Be really cautious about doing this, especially in light of our Andrew F. decision that we've talked about in prior episodes, where you really have to be able to talk about what the child's circumstances are and develop IEPs that are reasonably calculated for the child to make appropriate progress. So when you're waiving an evaluation, make sure you really have enough information that's current to be able to speak to that.
So I just want to explain what that means for our audience. So sometimes if it's a reevaluation, so if it's, you know, the child is up for their annual 3-year reevaluation, the team might say, oh, you know, we already have enough information about this child's academic progress. We already have enough information about this child's intelligence ability. We don't need to do all this testing again. And parents sometimes like that. So school districts also like that. It takes just more work off their plate. But we caution you against that, because if that parent says, oh, you know what, my child should have been making more progress, I am now filing an administrative special education education complaint or due process complaint, you're going to need to show that the child made appropriate progress in light of that child's circumstances. And if the child's last IQ score, last ability level, is from 6 years ago, you're going to have a difficult time showing that you knew what that child's circumstances were to prove that the child made appropriate progress. That's going to be very challenging for your team.
Right. And just keep in mind, and this is going to be kind of the same for records reviews too, you have to show the circumstances so that you can show that they're making progress in light of whatever those circumstances are for that child. So really, gone are the days of your evaluation just being the tool just to say eligible or not. It really needs to be a tool used to identify needs and talk about what that means for the classroom and performance. So if you can't speak to those things from the data that you have, then you are probably going to need to be conducting some assessments. So let's move on to another area.
Meaningful parent participation.
Yeah, this one comes up quite frequently in the due process complaints that we see. Claims about whether or not the parent had a right to a meaningful participation in the IEP progress. This can come down to scheduling issues, making sure that you're trying to find a mutually agreeable time. But the bigger area we see this come up in is what we refer to as predetermination.
Oh, I see that all the time. Yeah.
So that really is a current trend with complaints where basically the concept is the district is making some type of decision outside of the IEP process without parents' participation or input into that decision. So it's kind of said to be a decision made in advance of a meeting.
Yeah. And I think parents will often throw this out there when they don't agree with the district's decision. So they'll say, okay, well, we didn't agree with it, and you just decided that, so that's predetermination. But that's not accurate. Predetermination does not require a school district to just go along with whatever the parent wants.
Right. I think sometimes when the parent just doesn't even feel like you're considering what they're asking for, that kind of leads to this claim as well. But that definitely is not to say that the staff can't have prepared reports, can't come with pre-formed opinions and have discussions prior to a meeting about ideas and concepts that would work for the child. But it does mean that you need to ultimately include parents in those discussions and in the decision-making process. So you need to stay open-minded. And we do have a few tips that we can give you for trying to avoid these types of claims.
Yeah, and of course, it's very important that you document everything that you're doing specifically to avoid that charge of predetermination.
Right. So as you're moving through your evaluation process, make sure you really are actively soliciting parent input. That might be including rating scales, including parent questionnaires, you know, asking questions, interview about their child, what they're looking for, and making sure that not only you do those things, but those that they get documented into your evaluation and into the documents that are about your discussions, like your prior written notices.
Okay.
So just because it happened, certainly should we get into litigation about it, we could have you testify to it.
Mm-hmm.
But we definitely need the documentation to help support what you're testifying about.
Right. So if your ETR says, or whatever you call the document in your state, whether it's an evaluation team report or a multi-factored team report, if your report says, you know, parent was asked about Johnny's needs and this is what she said, that's evidence that you considered her input.
Right. And definitely don't rely on parent's silence equating to acceptance of something as well. You may need to do some follow-up with them. And certainly if they're silent, you can document that, though. If they're not giving you input, that's important to include as well.
Sometimes it's a good idea to see if you can meet parents halfway. And I think this is particularly difficult with litigious parents or hostile parents. Sometimes the school district is just annoyed and angry, and they're like, this is how it is, you know. And then the parent asks for something, and try to see, even if you're in that tense moment, try to see if you can say, okay, well, we're not going to put that in there. We're not going to do this whole thing or whatever. We're not, but this is what we can do. You know, so meet the parent halfway, if at all possible, and document that to show that you've considered the parent's
right. And
input.
In an application for this, for an evaluation specifically, make sure you can include, you know, parent provided the following input and the following recommendations. You can include that in your evaluation. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to provide every single thing. It's the parent's input and what they're looking for.
Right.
Also, make sure you're open-minded in the meeting to talk about these things and talk about the child. And don't forget, the parents do know their child, so they may be able to bring things to light that you aren't seeing on a everyday basis, or give some insight as to why you are seeing certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing to not forget is that you do need to allow participation by other people that the parent brings to the meeting. So if they bring a family friend or an advocate, you need to allow that person to participate in your discussions as well.
Yeah.
Now, as we move through the evaluation process, you are generally starting with a review of existing data, and there's a few things you want to keep in mind there as you review the data that you do have. Definitely make sure that you are considering outside evaluation results.
So that's like when a parent gets some kind of assessment from another place.
Right. So that might be information provided by a doctor. It might be an actual evaluation from another
facility. Yeah.
For our younger children, it may be early intervention services.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really can take a wide range of how it looks like. But you do want to make sure that the team is considering any of that information that the parent's providing. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to accept it word for word, but you do need to have discussions about it and review it. And it's really going to be important in your evaluations that you do document what you do review, so that you have that evidence that you are considering that information. It's certainly going to help you with your planning process and what you consider that you need to update when you do have to do testing.
Yeah, and just on that point, you know, I think we do caution our districts not to accept outside evaluations verbatim, like you said, word for word. You don't necessarily want to take that outside assessment and just attach it to your ETR. But you might want to paraphrase it or summarize what those assessments found.
Yeah, definitely pulling out the highlights.
Mm-hmm.
And it definitely helps to indicate, too, if there's specific things your team is accepting and does agree with, and if there's specific things your team does not agree with and why you don't agree.
Right.
Your evidence, your data supports something contrary because, and include
right.
that. Also, when you are considering your plan for your evaluation, make sure you're considering a wide range of assessments. You don't have a cookie cutter plan just because you're looking at a learning disability. You give A and B.
Mm-hmm.
You know, make sure you're looking at the whole child.
Mm-hmm.
And be sure that you're documenting on your planning form what information you do have and what information you need to get.
Right.
And that's going to include past records. So if you're doing a re-eval, you very much better be looking at that evaluation that was current up to that point.
Right.
Before you do that planning meeting. So keep those things in mind. Also, let's talk about some consent issues.
Oh, consent. This is a good one. Yep.
So you do have an obligation to make sure that you do get informed consent for evaluations.
Mm-hmm.
So that includes for assessments. That also includes for classroom observations.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to make sure you want to go through those steps, making sure also that you document your attempts to obtain that consent when you do have parents that maybe don't respond at all. You can move forward with testing unless your state has other laws contrary to that.
For a reevaluation.
For a reeval, yeah.
For an initial evaluation, you always need consent.
Yes, always consent. But for a reeval, there may be ways you're moving forward if you are getting no response. But that's not the situation when you have a parent say, no, I just won't give you my consent to do that. That's very different. And also keep in mind, too, conditioned consent can be tricky when a parent wants you only to give certain assessments or only administer them with certain conditions on the testing, like the parents in the room or...
Yeah, those can be tricky because sometimes what the parent is demanding is inconsistent with what the school psychologist's preferences or best practices or obligations.
Right. So for these situations, we just recommend that you are talking to administrators. You are including your legal counsel when you have these tricky issues, because some of it may be things to agree to and some of it you may not.
And you can think outside the box and propose other alternatives if what the parent is asking for is not tenable. But ultimately, if the parent is demanding, is insisting on some kind of condition that the school district doesn't feel is appropriate for, you know, legal or ethical reasons, then you can indicate that the parent has not given their consent.
There are times when conditioned consent does not equate to consent, really.
That's right.
But again, it's really nuanced and fact specific.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll want to include others in that discussion.
Yep.
Now let's just move on to really the content of your evaluation and where we see problems. An evaluation must really be sufficiently comprehensive to identify all the students' special education and related service needs. And we need to make sure that these evaluations really are individualized and that you are including individualized identification of needs and implications. So make sure you're not just including a laundry list of your go-to list for a child may benefit from. Really make sure it's individualized to the specific student and the assessment results you are obtaining. And that's not just going to be your norm referenced assessments. That's going to be, what do you see in the classroom? What other curriculum-based measures do you have?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're going to be looking at having comprehensive testing that looks at different settings and different measures that you can get a good picture of the whole child.
Mm-hmm.
It's also going to be really important that you're explaining those results and your interpretation of the results in a way in your report that a reader can understand. So you're really going to want to try to get away from the jargon
mm-hmm.
yeah, that educators might understand, but a parent doesn't understand. What does that mean?
I think even educators, I mean, if you, this is really to the school psychologist listening here. If you're a school psychologist and you're writing that evaluation piece, don't use the jargon. Just make it very simple and interesting and easy to understand. If you're using jargon, that might come across as professional to you, but if it's not readable and understandable, it's not worth anybody's time.
Yeah, and another thing too with your assessments, if you are getting inconclusive results, don't be afraid to conduct additional testing. Don't think just because you normally give a certain cognitive assessment or a certain achievement assessment that you can't give another one if you need to clarify some of the results. So keep that in mind too, and make sure that you are including all areas of need and all related service providers that the child may need involved because of their needs, and that that's not specific just to whatever disability label or identification you're suspecting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could definitely have a child with a specific learning disability that may still have social, emotional, or executive functioning needs.
Sure.
So you'll want to make sure that you're including those, or if they need to look at communication or fine motor skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just really making sure you are taking a comprehensive approach. And also, when you get to reevaluations, especially in like middle school, high school, be sure that you're still keeping that open-minded view and not getting narrow just because, oh, the last evaluation only looked at A and B. Get information and know these kids. It's really going to help you in doing a comprehensive evaluation. And then the last tip I have with the comprehensive testing is to make sure you're including relevant background in your report. I can't tell you how many evaluations I review, and it's kind of just assumed that the reader knows the background. But
yeah.
This is going to be another way, one, to get the picture of what the kid needs, but also a good way for you to easily document what you really did review.
Yeah.
You know, that you reviewed the last ETR, that you reviewed the private evaluations.
I love seeing evaluations, Lisa, where the background is all laid out and I can just read it as a new person coming in. I just see what the district did, and it just makes me feel so good about my client when I see all that relevant background.
Yeah, I agree. And please keep in mind, this is like a summary. This isn't to say you shouldn't be copying and pasting an entire other evaluation into yours.
Right.
But do give us the picture of what has gone on previously.
Mm-hmm.
Last big issue that I want to touch on is eligibility and making your eligibility determinations. So I want you to keep in mind that determining whether a child is eligible really is a team decision. Be careful that not just one person is deciding, that only one view is being discussed. Make sure you're really including all team members. And this may mean that you need to discuss in more than one meeting. You know, if you...
It might go forward to another
meeting.
Right.
So this is where with your timelines, maybe be careful you're not meeting on the very last day where you know, your timeline's up.
Yep.
Especially if you suspect that your school-based team may have a different opinion than the parents,
right.
Or if you even have team members that might have some different opinions, you're going to mm-hmm. want to give ample time to talk. But it's going to be important that you realize that the school district is the one responsible for ensuring a free and appropriate public education. So ultimately,
we're not going to vote on this. It's not going to be a majority vote.
Correct. It's going to need to be team discussions, but ultimately the school district is going to be responsible for determining that.
And if the team doesn't agree, then the district determines the appropriate services and provides parent with prior written notice.
Yeah, and since we're really talking about evaluations, you're not necessarily going to delineate what all those services are in your evaluation. But for example, if you think the child is eligible under one category and the parent thinks another, you know, mm-hmm. you really do have to go with what is appropriate based on the documentation. Be careful not to just appease parents sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think we get in that trap. But also making sure, though, that you're considering everything they're bringing to the table. So if a parent says, well, I think this category instead, be sure to really listen to their reasons why, mm-hmm. because they're very well maybe a reason to, maybe a way to incorporate that.
Sure.
And also be having the discussions, too. The eligibility determination isn't necessarily going to drive your IEP.
That's
right. The child's needs drive what goes into the IEP.
That's right.
So, yes, the eligibility ultimately gets them eligible. And we know outside there's other reasons why people want certain eligibilities, whether it be the
sure.
stigma that goes with it, whether it be different funding issues. Mm-hmm. We know that that's out there. But keep in mind that's
it's a secondary.
Needs. It's secondary,
yeah.
Yes. And it's the needs that drive the IEP. And also, when you're explaining your eligibility determination, be sure to give a good explanation of your justification. Makes me crazy when I get these evaluations and it literally just says they're eligible for this category because here's the definition. That
right.
doesn't tell me anything about how the student has met
the category.
Right.
Yeah.
What happens in their progress in the general curriculum that equates to that category? Just
right.
be sure to explain that. So the last thing to consider, too, about eligibility is a child very well may meet eligibility for multiple categories.
Mm-hmm.
You're just going to be determining the primary category, right? Narrowing it down to one. And sometimes a further explanation of that is needed for parents to understand, yes, maybe you're going with category A, but that doesn't mean they don't display needs that would align with another category
mm-hmm.
and that those needs still will be addressed
right.
in a further developed IEP.
Right.
Just to kind of wrap things up, we do have a couple other general issues just to give you some brief reminders of before we say goodbye today.
Okay, excellent. So timelines. Timelines are very important. Missing timelines are one of the key mistakes that we see when we start looking at due process complaints. Be sure to send prior written notices and beware of parents who push the district out of compliance by asking for extensions. So, for example, if you have a parent that says, no, I just can't make this meeting, I'm so sorry, can we reschedule it for next week? Or if a parent says, you know, I'm waiting on this and this from a doctor or from an outside provider, can we reschedule the meeting? Sometimes you can, but sometimes you can't. And it's okay to go ahead and have that meeting with your team and tell the parent that you can reconvene again after the deadline to consider any new information. That's fine, but make sure that you still have that meeting even if the parent is unable to attend or even if the parent comes without all the information that she wanted to bring to the table. You can always meet again.
Yeah, that reconvening is really important that you do always. I mean, anytime there's new information, you can reconvene. But keep in mind, too, with that, we're not saying that you make sure you meet if you've only notified parent once and have not documented any other attempts. You got to make sure that you're going through your proper steps to find a mutually agreeable time as well. So don't push yourself into that deadline of your meeting on the last day, and that's why your team has to meet.
Mm-hmm. Right. Another area is the attendance, the required team members. So sometimes people don't have time or they're trying to leave early. You always want to make sure you have your team members there and that you have an excusal form for those people who are not able to attend.
Well, in that excusal form, we won't jump into that today, but just a caution to be careful when you're using that and when you are excusing required team members that they're still providing input to the whole team, not just only calling parent to give their input.
That's
the team
true.
Needs all that information to consider. And this includes leaving early, too. Don't forget, like, you can't just have a district rep show up for 5 minutes and leave.
Mm. Oh, that's interesting. I haven't seen that. That's interesting.
You know, in another episode, we can dive into some of those nuances a little bit more. But just some things to keep in mind. We hope this discussion has been helpful for you today. Overall, just remember that a district evaluation is going to be a key tool to defend the district should contention develop, and definitely needs to be comprehensive to then drive your development of your IEP if the child's eligible, or in the contrary, to support the decision if you determine a child isn't.
Thanks for joining us today. Have a great day. Don't forget to leave us feedback and rate us on iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast. That helps the algorithm. And
don't say all that.
Don't say
they don't care about the algorithm.
Okay. Have a great day.
The content of this podcast is provided for general information purposes only. The podcast is not legal advice, does not create an attorney-client relationship, and should not be relied upon in making legal decisions. Actions on legal matters should be taken only upon advice of legal counsel. Walter Haverfield does not guarantee the accuracy of information contained in this podcast.